Pastor Mai, and welcome to this week's extended agenda programme. I'm Phil Gorn. Politics will change your life, so why will nearly half the people not vote? This week, I continue the discussion we started a few weeks ago with four experienced political commentators. Member of the Legislative Council, Kerry Sharp, former MHKs, Hazel Hannan and Eddie Teer, and Alistair Ramsey, a journalist and political commentator. They consider coverage of politics, why many people are switched off by politics, the purchase of the steam packet, conflict between Comyn and Tynwald, and much more. Everyone who stands for the House of Keys has to win the majority, or be second, or win the majority in their particular constituency. And it's fair to say that we elect politicians because we don't want to have to read through 100 reports a week on a range of different dry subjects. We expect our politicians to get on with it. Then, of course, social media has come along, which allows us to express our opinions on the things that we haven't spent much time finding out about. So elections have become more and more important, I think, and yet the ability for people to understand what's going on is perhaps not as great as it maybe it used to be. Is that an issue? Is that really important? Is there something we need to do in terms of allowing the public greater understanding, greater access to the information that's out there?
Yes, definitely. I think that government and Parliament both have to get with it in terms of communication and engagement with the public. I think in the past it's perhaps suited them not to communicate very clearly as to, you know, everything that they're doing, and certainly not to engage. I mean, yes, government runs surveys at the moment, but not everyone's online, and even when people do respond, it might not be that many people.
And I have had occasion to fill in some of these surveys and thought to myself, you've already decided what you want to do. What you need now is for me to tick the next.
Yes,
absolutely.
And questions can be very skewed.
Yeah.
And I think that.
And I know, and I should say before I go on, or before you go on, having been on the other side of the table, I know that these consultations are put out with the best, in most cases anyway, with the best possible of intentions. But you do wonder sometimes whether the decision's been made and the consultation is to rubber stamp the decision. Yeah.
I think that what we need to see is Parliament going out and explaining to people, you know, what they do, and basically what the difference is between Parliament and government. Yeah. And government needs to make sure that within the curriculum there is Manx politics and Manx history taught in all schools. And you can start at the age of four, because you can go into a classroom and say, on Friday all the girls are going to get a cream bun but the boys aren't. Is that fair? Hmm. And you can get them talking, well, it's not fair. Well, why isn't it fair? Well, what are you going to do about it then? Who are you going to go to? You know, if you think something's not fair, you can go to your MHK and then they can bring it to Tynwald.
Some of that does happen, doesn't it?
You can build on that every year. Yeah. Some of it does happen, it's true. But we know, you know, the proof is that if you stop people on the street and say, what's the difference between Tynwald and government? Most people will say, well, they're the same thing, aren't they? So it hasn't really succeeded. And I think that there needs to be this ongoing and proactive communication with the public. I noticed today in my inbox, Manx Care have just started a patient liaison service where everyone who's got a complaint to make can make it into the same person's inbox. And so there's one person who's collating all this feedback, which will be really useful. And when you think about it, government doesn't have one portal where the public can actually feed back and say, we're worried about this, or we want to see change here. There's nobody to sort of look overall and say, oh, these are the themes and trends that are coming through at the moment from the public, so what should we be doing? I mean, obviously MHKs can do it within their individual constituencies, but I think that it would help to have one portal.
Well, during Alan Bell's administration, you recall that we were like coconuts on a coconut shy with the so-called Roman Comyn. And, you know, where the council of ministers went out once a quarter around the island, and we got a pounding at times.
But it was effective, wasn't
it?
It was a great opportunity. And we got, as ministers, we certainly got to find out what the public who attended those presentations thought.
Yeah. And, you know, some of them were very well attended. You know, Alistair was organising them for us, and it worked well, you know, and it meant that some of the ministers could face the public direct for some of the decisions that they'd taken. You know, we might have said in the Council of Ministers, are you sure about that one?
Hmm. And then
oh yeah, we're going ahead.
But you have to think about the number of people that are there.
Yeah.
A small number of people, as you've said, respond to these consultations.
It's regular customers, isn't it?
Regular, yeah. Yes. Yeah. And you might get, like you did on abortion, you've got a lot of people commenting because there was a lot of feeling about that. But if you're just looking, you put out a consultation, and as you say, it's skewered because you look at it and it's skewered. I mean, they're skewering climate change to biomass. You know, I mean, how does
is
that
this
work?
The
other thing is importing all our energy. What's that about? That's not addressing climate change. So, I mean, there's these sort of things where they're skewering everything. When we're talking about Tynwald and we're talking about Parliament, because we never talked about Parliament. It was always the House of Keys. Right, the House of Keys is the Parliament. It is the law-making part. There is not enough coverage of what the laws are. Every time, every Tuesday, these are the questions that somebody is asking. And I used to ask questions too. But what happened to the legislation? You hear about legislation once a year when it's read out at Tynwald, fait accompli, nobody knows what's happened, the legislation is passed. Except when there's something which the press like to get their teeth into, because legislation is not covered on the newspapers. You've only got to look at old newspapers and the actual report of what's happened in the House of Keys, what's happened in the Legislative Council, and then every month, Tynwald.
And Alistair, you're a press man. Why has that happened? I mean, certainly I know when I was first elected in 2003, there was a fair summary of most of the important debates and who voted what way. But over the course of possibly 5 or 8 years, it moved to the whoever said the most sensational thing got a headline, and that was about it. So what's happened?
I think that's the way of the world. I remember as a young journalist sitting through all the readings and all the clauses of all the legislation and then trying to translate that to the public, which was a real challenge.
And yet really but important.
It is important, actually, and the skill is extracting the significance from it all, about what will this mean to people. I just think that, I don't know, I think maybe the public is less interested, maybe the journalists have realised that there's a limited audience for it, and the way of the world now is that you do focus on noise, sensation, novelty, and we've got short attention spans.
But, you know, I think that it's journalists' business, as you knew, to make things interesting.
Yeah.
But it's also government and Parliament's business. For example, if Tynwald had a media liaison's officer, then it would be that person's job to actually reach out to the public and say, now, the elderly population or young people who are wanting to buy a house or whatever it is, here's some information for you, which you might find interesting because this affects you, you know, and to actually put that out in an interesting way, you know, aimed at that particular age demographic. And I think that this is where media and Tynwald and government, you know, could work together better. And also, I mean, this sort of feeds also into the kind of ongoing debate about public service media, which is one of my favourite topics. But because I do think that public service media, this is where it plays a massive role. And if you can only get government and public service media working together, then you can get these issues out and you can get people talking and you can encourage the public to engage.
thinking of it, of the position of the humble MHK candidate, MHK wannabe, going around as they will be over the course of the next few months, they may have all these great visions for the future about how they want to change all these wonderful things, but actually most people aren't that bothered about politics. I mean, I had a ride in a taxi recently. Doesn't happen very often, but on this occasion I had a ride in a taxi, and the taxi driver got into talk, and I said I was doing some election coverage for Manx Radio, and he said, I'm not going to vote, waste of time. And I'm thinking, this fellow is probably in his 20s. He's got a lot to be angry about, actually. You know, that younger generation, 20s to 30s, yeah. They're having it bad compared with the generations that have retired and the generations approaching retirement. Yeah. It's awful. Why are these people not out on the street? You're listening to Kerry Sharp, MLC, former MHK's Hazel Hannan and Eddie Teer, and Alistair Ramsay.
Well, I think it's not just an Isle of Man problem. I think it's a global problem, you know, that governments everywhere have, is how to engage younger voters. You know, it's an ongoing...
Oh, but it's not just younger. It's also older. I mean, the people that I've been meeting, young families saying, disillusioned by politics. Older people saying... disillusioned by politics, I don't think I'll bother voting, and you know that's tends to be where we're up to. I don't know whether it's the UK politics, people continually lying and just sort of glossing over everything, the treatment of people, migrants, immigrant, refugees, coming in. Why lock refugees up? People are short of workers. Allow them out if they're prepared to work. They would be, because they'd earn money and they'd be able to send it back to their families. That's the that's the only reason that they've become refugees in most cases. The same here, Short of workers, why don't we offer people refugees places here? They could come in and they could work while they're waiting for their refugee status to be investigated. As long as maybe you could say they have to register every week or whatever, but just so that so that people were legal, people that were here could actually work, and they weren't treated as criminals being locked up.
I think too, in the case of immigration, Phil, we could help to control the pressure on health by putting a block in older people coming to retire to the island.
Absolutely,
because they come here, they're fit and able when they come, and within a matter of a few years, they're relying on our health service. But they put nothing in before they came here. National health insurance contributions we pay to the UK. So the way things are going now, I would say, sorry, you're not coming. End of story.
And people forget that legislation is actually in place to control residents. It's been in place for quite a long time.
Yeah.
Hasn't yet been switched on. But that would be a big change.
But in terms of this question that we've sort of been trying to address at the earlier stage of this discussion about... the people getting switched off from politics. Is it a problem that's too big for the Isle of Man to tackle? Is it possible to tackle with this? Is the, perhaps some might say, somewhat archaic system of Timbaland Parliament, government, the House of Keys, is that too confusing for people? Would it really make that big a difference if we radically reformed the way in which Parliament and government interact?
Well, the question was asked of me, why all these consultations? Don't we elect a member to be a representative of the people to make the decisions? You know, why have all these... are they listening to what the response is? And I mean, maybe that's something that's influenced people about their feeling about about the politicians. Maybe it's government, but politicians trying to influence the people as instead of the other way around. That's just one area, I think, that maybe people are disillusioned.
And Hazel, I mean, you were in Tynwald when significant reforms were happening. Since probably the last 20 years, maybe longer, there hasn't really been any significant constitutional reform. Why do you think that is?
I think probably a change of the membership, maybe. Yes, I think, and I think it was mentioned before we started this programme, about having no memory of anything, really. New people coming in, not interested in what had gone on before, not interested about people's knowledge of issues, and things being brought in from the UK. And saying that, people coming in from the UK to work in government and bringing those sort of issues with them that they've experienced. I mean, legislation. We used to always say it had to be our legislation. We're not mirroring what's somewhere else. Because why does the House of Keys exist? Why does government exist here if all we're going to do is mirror what's happening in the UK? Right, we can learn from what they've done, or what Europe has done, or what Ireland has done, or somewhere else has done. I think Australia was mentioned at one time about immigration, and those sort of issues. But the House of Keys is there to discuss legislation, and not just give it a seal of approval, to discuss it and to try to make it better.
Yeah, that's a big part of the problem, because when I was in post, civil servants would say, they would use the expression, it should be done for best practice. And I say, well, sorry, it's what Tynwald's agreed. It's the regulations that matter. It's not up to the civil servants to make policy. But Hazel did allude to this earlier. When we walked out through the door, or just before I walked out through the door, I left a note. You're very welcome to pick my brains if you want to. If you want to get a bit of background history on why something happened or whatever. Now, I checked with Alan Bell last week. Neither of us have had any contact whatsoever.
And did you speak to Alan Bell? Well, I suppose you did, because you were serving in the same government. But former Treasury ministers, did you ever have any contact with them?
Well, I was lucky because Alan had been Treasury Minister for a long, long time, you know, so I could work with him.
But you were Education Minister and Health Minister.
I was Health, Education, and then came into Treasury after that, yeah. Mm.
So in those other roles, did you seek out the former ministers to ask...
I was able to have words on them. You know, they were always there, but there was nothing controversial that came up. Mm. You know, for example, one of the big issues that this government has dealt with was the purchase of the steam packet. You were down at the sea terminal 2015. We met representatives from the Banco Espirito de Santo, and it was quite clear that the picture that they were setting out was the picture that they wanted us to believe. And we walked away from it. Now, they should have said, in my opinion, this has been going on for a while. Mm. You guys had the chance. Why didn't you take it? You know, because that would have actually give them a bit more negotiating ability when they went back.
And, of course, one of the joys of election time is we can't... We don't get to hear directly from politicians on shows like this, or politicians seeking election for the Keys, I should say. Obviously, Kerry's an exception in that regard. And in fact, an exception as a member of LegCo, who isn't seeking a seat in the Keys. But it's probably wrong of us to go too far down the road of what was the motivation of current governments. But is the structure? I mean, is the relationship between Tynwald and government right? I mean, we had the last major significant reform was the advent of ministerial government, and there were a few tweaks to that after it was introduced, but there hasn't really been much. Certainly, in my time in Tynwald, both as a backbencher and as a minister. It became blatantly obvious to me that the vast majority of power lies within the hands of the ministers. And Tynwald's role is obviously to keep the ministers on their toes, but quite frankly, most of the big decisions are taken in the Council of Ministers' chamber. Now, there's been a shift in that when new members go back into Keys after the election, they won't have to be a member of a department to earn the same money as members who choose not to be in department. That may actually have quite a dramatic impact on the way in which government works. But is it time actually that we actually ditch the whole tricameral system, you know, the three branches, Keys, Legco and Tynwald, and moved into a directly elected Tynwald? Or is that not really going to make that much difference? I don't know.
If it was me, I would just go into a single chamber, because you'll recollect that there was criticism about MHK's moving up into Legco. You know, it's a retirement home for the Doddery, with due respect.
They're not Doddery anymore.
Yeah, they're not Doddery anymore. But there was an awful lot of experience lost. When Eddie Lowy, for example, got on his feet in Legco, he could turn the house. You know, yeah. He was excellent. Yeah. And Claire Christian, she was another, any minister on
this
his
own. Claire Christian Senior as opposed to Claire Christian Junior, of course.
Claire Christian Senior, yeah. When Claire got on her feet, she could just go straight to the core of the argument, and if the minister wasn't on top of his or her portfolio, she had them straight away. And I was always very nervous when she got on her feet, because I was in health and she'd been the health minister, and when she got on her feet, I knew I had to pin my ears back.
Absolutely. I know she did that to me once when she was president and wasn't really supposed to engage in debate. There was a point that I think we'd put something in an order, expecting the Farmers Union to pick up on it so that we would then have to take it out again. And they didn't. But Claire did and said, was the Farmers Union happy with this? And they were. Anyway, that's by the by. Alistair,
I was just going to say that what the ministerial system did was make it clear who the government was.
That's
it concentrated
right, yes.
Power and responsibility in a group of members. But what's become more and more obvious is that government doesn't have a clear or direct mandate from the people because of our electoral system. Hence, they haven't got much clear direction when they set off. It's probably one of the reasons why they consult so much. And I think that if we're not going to have a party system, then at the very least, that first programme for government, that government manifesto that they issue, should be clear and addressed to the public and set out some very, let's say, 10 priorities. This is what we're going to do. And then at the end of the term, they report back to the public. That helps inform the election campaign as well. Because otherwise, we're all flying blind. And I think Kerry alluded to this earlier on, the lack of information, that our radar as to what's going on in society is very poor. And I think that's one of the reasons why people aren't engaged.
You're listening to Kerry Sharp MLC, former MHK's Hazel Hannan and Eddie Teer, and Alistair Ramsey.
Yes, I know, but what would happen there is that something would come in, like COVID, and it just say we couldn't do that because of COVID.
Oh, it's events, yes.
Dear boy,
but
events.
You do an annual update, and they used to do, I mean, the old policy programmes back in the days of Miles Walker and Fred Kissick, they haven't been equaled because they were clear and succinct. They used the English language rather than coded spreadsheets and stuff, which old duffers like me can't get my head around.
That's right. There was a minister on the other day talking a load of gobbledygook.
Name no names, please.
Name no names, no. But it was gobbledygook. And, I mean, it was all these jargons.
And I should say, backbenchers occasionally talk gobbledygook too, but for balance there.
They do, but when it's a, when it's somebody that's talking on doing the presentation, I think it was on the radio and not in Tynwald, but there was nobody there to say, what did that mean? Whereas if somebody is talking and they're there, it's, excuse me, what does that mean? And, people have got to think, when you get into keys, you've got to speak clearly and you've got to speak so that, the man on the bus
Go to Peel to put air in there,
can't
they?
That's right. Knows what you're talking about. Otherwise, you're wasting your breath.
That's my favourite question as a departmental member, actually. What does that actually mean in real life? There's so much that can be hidden behind all this kind of,
people
civil
would
servant
turn out
speak,
to vote, wouldn't they? They'd really turn out in great numbers if they actually understood a bit more about how it all works and understood what people stand for. But unfortunately, it would appear that you don't necessarily have to put very much in your manifesto to get elected.
Yeah. Alistair is right that there should be a programme of government laid out. It should be very clear. There should be updates on how far forward they are with that. And then there should be a really good analysis at the end to see whether they've actually achieved that or not. But I think going back to what we were talking about before about, does the structure need changing? I don't think it does in that, you've got power concentrated in the hands of eight ministers. That's not so much the problem. It's the departmental membership that's a problem, because if those ministers then want their department members to vote with them, then you've got a real problem. And then that, to me,
but they
also
don't have to, do they?
They don't have to. They don't have to. But then it kind of can be implied. But that's where LegCo comes in. I mean, I know you were talking, Eddie, earlier about, just have one elected single chamber. But that's where LegCo comes in. And that is the beauty of the current system, which is that if Council of Ministers are trying to push things one way and the general feeling of Parliament is that things shouldn't be going that way, then LegCo can work with your backbenchers to actually slow things down. And that's a good thing.
But they can only you can only hold it up for so long.
Yeah, they can. If you look at 2019, there was a government amendment which was looking to weaken the motion for stronger approach to global climate emergency, and LegCo voted with the backbenchers and held that back. Then we had another month where we then engaged with various departments and came to a conclusion which was much more agreeable to government and to Parliament. And then with the domestic abuse bill, LegCo said, no, actually, we're not happy with this. What we're going to do is we're going to ask for a meeting of the two branches, so LegCo and House of Keys can meet together and we can talk through this and we can try and come to some kind of compromise. We don't want to hold it up for a year, but actually you need to think again. So I think that we have really shown over the last few years, the value of having that second chamber and having another pair of eyes and just sort of giving a pause for breath and a bit of a rethink. I think that there's a lot of value in that. I mean, I would say that because I'm in LegCo, but I do think that there is a lot of value in that. Yeah.
But when we're talking about the general election, what we have to remember is that the people standing for election are standing for the House of Keys. And the job of the House of Keys is to pass legislation. It's either to raise the legislation or it's to pass it. Primarily. And I think people sometimes forget that is the principal object of this election. It's the actual debating structure of that process. Yeah. And I think people think that it's just the man in the street that's going to represent their views within their community or within their circle or whatever. And that is not necessarily the case. You've got to look really deep into the legislation to make sure that legislation, I accept that it goes to Legislative Council afterwards for revising to make sure that it works and goes through, you know, makes it sure that it fits in with everything else that's going on, and, you know, making it as strong or as ever it should be. Is that 24
yeah.
that have got to do the principal yeah. work with that?
I completely agree with Hazel. There's too much emphasis put on questions.
Yeah.
Now, the time that those questions take, and normally what they do is, you've been on the receiving end of them as I have, they put the question on the order paper. Isn't really what they want to know. It's just might be generally related to what they want to know. So they get the door open, come with a supplementary question and ask what they want to know.
But I always found, I mean, maybe it was just me, but I enjoyed question time, particularly if someone had lots of questions down for me, because if you were on top of your brief, it was free advertising for your department. So actually,
and yourself.
Well, yeah.
The most fun I ever had in question time was when a member asked me a question that I could just say yes or no. And I just stood up and said yes, sat straight down.
I think he did that to me.
He's no a rascal, cring- wasn't he?
No,
anyway,
Kringle was the best, and that was it.
I fear that we're going to run out of tape in this machine, so I'm going to ask you, each one of you, to tell me what you would love to happen in 5 years' time, one particular thing, probably go for something that it's unlikely to be able to be achieved, but if in 5 years' time you had your wish, what one thing would the new House of Keys, the new Tynwald, have been able to deliver? And I should say, while you have a chance to think about this, I've really enjoyed this. I hope you have too, and I hope people listening at home have as well. It's quite a fascinating subject. It's a very important subject. I mean, we could have talked, I'm sure, for another hour on a range of issues, and maybe we will sometime. Who wants to go first? Anybody got a dazzling vision for the future, thing that they would like to see but know is unlikely to happen?
I would like to see firm prioritisation of the allocation of resources. What's the priorities? Where does the money flow? Simple as that. Because then the public would know exactly the aims and the objectives of the government.
Okay. Alistair, you were?
I guess I would like to see a far fairer settlement for the younger generation, and particularly around housing, so that they could have confidence in their future here. But for that to happen, we need them to vote and get engaged.
Absolutely. Hazel, have you thought of a dazzling thing that could happen that would startle you? But please you.
I think probably something that is not really in Tynwald's power to give, or the House of Keys to give, is that banks and companies leaving the Isle of Man. It really worries me that we've got so few of any value left here. They've all relocated to Jersey and Guernsey, and so we're left without banking services, you know, which are important. I'd like to see it won't happen, but a bank set up that would serve the Isle of Man, and just like supporting young people, you know. They're saying, oh, that pensions are going to rise. I know people that need their pensions to rise should have a rise. But when people have money, they should pay for their services, at least pay for, we talked about before, prescriptions, eye tests, those sort of things, television licenses, you know. Let's get real and give the young people back something, and encourage them to stay, or allow them to return. I think these are things that maybe not in, a lot of them aren't in the gift of Tynwald members, but something to improve the quality of life, I think, in the Isle of Man.
And Kerry, you're in a way, this is an unfair question, because the other three have no influence in this whatsoever, but you will have 2 years at least to have a crack at this. What would be the one thing that you'd love to see have happened in 5 years' time from this new Tynwald?
Well, I'd say at the moment I'm political leader for children and families, and come October, you know, we'll have to see what happens there. But if I am still political leader, and even if I'm not, my biggest wish would be for the Isle of Man to be the best place in Britain to live as a child, and in particular as a looked after child, because I believe that that is doable and that is achievable over the next 5 years.
And is that what people call vision? It probably is, isn't it? And maybe we'll some wannabe MHKs will listen to this programme and think, gosh, we've just heard some vision there. Maybe that's something we could try. That's all from tonight's programme. We had fun and I hope you found it interesting. That was Kerry Sharp, Hazel Hannon, Eddie Teer and Alistair Ramsey, hopefully inspiring you to vote and to encourage your friends to do so. You can listen to an extended podcast of this discussion on Manx Radio's website and on Spotify. I'm keen to represent your views on the show, so please get in touch if you have any ideas for our future agenda. But for now, Guramayu, thanks for listening.